Hello, and welcome to Fathoming Water. I'm your host, Melissa Mosey. Last week, we talked with Louise Mistel of the Sky Island Alliance, who advocates for science-based and climate-smart land management, conducts spatial analysis and mapping, and leads the spring survey and protection work for this important Southern Arizona environmental nonprofit. This week, we talk with another Southern Arizona environmental nonprofit, the Watershed Management Group, which is led under the direction of Lisa Shepek as executive director. This is a jam-packed episode because Watershed Management Group is doing a lot of incredible work in the community. Their primary mission is connecting people to their natural environment through education and volunteer-based projects. Their goal is to create abundance in the community, an abundance in natural resources, an abundance in water for human and environmental needs, and an abundance in our lives so we can cherish the incredible landscape we live in. Watershed Management Group has regular classes about rainwater harvesting, gray water systems, community gardens, and a myriad of other topics to teach people the best practices for living well and sustainably in the Sonoran Desert. They reach out to the wider community through social events like mesquite pancake breakfasts and local beer crawls in order to spread awareness about water. They partner with many diverse partners, including government, nonprofits, and businesses. What this means is that every staff member is effectively an educator about water. This philosophy comes from the background of how Watershed Management Group started, which was at the University of Arizona, when a group of graduate students came together to dream of something bigger. I'll let Lisa tell you that story. Since 2006, Lisa Shepek has served as executive director of Watershed Management Group. Lisa has expertise in developing training programs for professionals, developing environmental education programs for adults and children, and collaborating with a diverse range of partners to implement community-based environmental projects. Lisa directs fundraising, strategic development, and outreach activities for Watershed Management Group. She manages several of Watershed Management Group's programs, including the unique Tucson Conserve to Enhance program, which links individual water conservation savings with local river restoration, and Watershed Management Group's Water Harvesting Certification program that trains professionals from throughout the United States and abroad. She holds a Bachelor's of Science in Environmental Science and a Master's of Arts in Latin American Studies. Through her work with Watershed Management Group, she is particularly interested in developing educational programs that improve quality of life in urban areas. Lisa believes low-tech, community-based solutions can solve today's most pressing environmental challenges, and we get a sense of that in this episode of Fathoming Water. And now, Lisa Shepek.
My name is Lisa Shepek, and I'm the executive director of Watershed Management Group, a nonprofit organization based here in Tucson, Arizona.
How did Watershed Management Group get started?
It's a fun story. So all the founders of Watershed Management Group were students, graduate students at the University of Arizona, and most of them met through the Natural Resources Department. Most of them were doing the Watershed Management Master's Program, and it was a group of people that really wanted to be able to take what they were learning and bring it to the community. One of the founding members had been involved in Peace Corps and just really saw the impact of that on the ground grassroots work. And sometimes this type of information can seem really technical or left to someone else to do, like the agencies out there to do that. But we really wanted to bring what we were learning down to the level of, you can do this at your home, you can do this at your school, anyone can do this. And a lot of this is simple practices, and it really does relate to your day-to-day life. And honestly, we didn't know a whole lot about what it meant to start an organization, so we learned a lot in the first few years. And all of us were then involved as a working board. So that was in around 2003, we got our 501c3 status. And then by 2007, we had started to do a little bit of on-the-ground work, but we all had other jobs. And then at that point, I decided that I wanted to focus my time on this work and decided to become a staff member on a volunteer basis, and then was able to build up some funding in that first year for the positions.
And how long have you been the executive director?
I have been the director for 9 years.
And how large is the organization?
We have 16 staff, and we have an office here in Tucson and a smaller office in Phoenix. Our annual budget this year is just over $1 million. So we've grown quite a bit. About 10 years ago, we were starting from scratch. So it's been a pretty steady growth over the last 10 years. Watershed Management Group really focuses on connecting people to their local environment, and doing that through hands-on educational activities. One of the things we're most known for is our Green Living Co-op, and that is a program where people can come out and actually help implement water harvesting practices like a rain tank or a gray water system through a workshop that we lead. And it's a bit like a barn raising model. So we plan the project, bring everyone out on a Saturday morning, and by early afternoon, the project's complete. It's really an educational focus, teaching people about the natural resources that we have here and how to really use those to create abundance in our life here.
Okay, so how do people find you? Is it interested individuals who want to put in rain harvesting in their house and take your courses?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's lots of different ways to get involved. People can attend classes. So we do a fair number of classes at our Living Lab and Learning Center in Midtown Tucson. Rainwater harvesting, gray water harvesting. We teach about soils, about irrigation, tree pruning, all sorts of things. And that's probably the easiest way for people to get involved when they're first checking out the organization is to come to one of those classes. We also do some events, some really fun social events. Like every fall, we do a mesquite pancake breakfast.
Carolyn Roach was talking about that.
Yeah. So we love to do fun community events. Recently, there was a craft beer crawl downtown just a few weekends ago, and WMG was a partner on that. We ended up being the beneficiary of the proceeds, but we were out there. We had an educational booth, and we're involved in some of the messaging around that event. So that would be a way people might hear about us, and then they'd go to our website and learn more about our classes and workshops.
Now, Watershed Management Group partners with lots of other organizations in the Tucson area, correct?
Yes. Yeah, we have pretty diverse partnerships. Everyone from schools, elementary schools, high schools, to other nonprofit organizations in town, to our city council offices. So we also do get involved in policy work and doing community demonstration sites. So for example, we have retrofitted 4 of the city council office landscapes with water harvesting projects. That's been pretty fun to kind of get involved at that level in the city too.
And is the work that you do, is that primarily volunteers that are completing that work?
Yeah, primarily the project is done with volunteers. And the reason we have it set up that way is because we want people to be able to get that experience and learn and to be able to take that home. And so again, ties back into our educational mission. It's not just getting those projects installed, but teaching people while we're doing it.
Okay, so education is the primary goal of Watershed Management Group?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, education, building capacity, and enabling people to take action.
Are your funds raised through memberships?
Not exactly. We do have donors to the organization, and that does comprise about 1/3 of our budget. And then we also have grant funds that help support programs, and then we also have a number of programs that are fee-based that comprises the other portion of our budget. So things like we have a water harvesting certification that people pay for to attend. We offer consultations for people at their homes. That's fee-based. Some of our classes are fee-based. So that's the other portion of our income.
I was checking out your staff online, and you have a staff that does a diverse range of things.
It's a pretty fun organization just with the diverse things we're working on. And so we have people who are doing policy work to people who are out at people's homes actually implementing these projects. So a wide range of skills. And then we have a number of staff who kind of do it all. So sort of a renaissance position where they can be out in the field doing the work to teaching people. Pretty much all of our staff are educators. So that's a fun component, whether you're teaching children or teaching people at their homes or teaching other professionals in the field. We're always educating. So that's a really big piece of all of our staff members' background is doing the educational side of it. And then we have people like landscape designers on staff. We have water resources engineer, cultural ecologist. So we have, you know, a really diverse spread. And I think that really speaks to the need for having a diverse team when you work on watershed issues. It's not just looking at an issue from just a single issue. It's kind of looking at all the aspects of the watershed, from environmental to social to political to economic. And so you really need a diverse team to do that.
I've had other guests who have mentioned that if you're missing a piece of the puzzle that is water management, that there can be unintended consequences, that you can leave people and sectors of the community out, and that really looking at it holistically is a big aspect of
Absolutely.
It.
And I think that's what I love about watershed management, is it is looking at the big picture. It is, you know, watershed is how nature organizes itself. So it's all this area of land that is connected by water, and then everything that's happening in that land area, like I mentioned, from not just the environmental factors, but what's happening in urban centers, what's happening with agriculture, the economies that you find within that watershed. So I think that's really important to kind of take that holistic approach.
Do you define your service area by, say, the Gila River watershed or something like that?
Yeah, we do define our service area by watersheds, and they're embedded in within each other. So we start, being based here in Tucson, kind of the inner circle is the Santa Cruz watershed. And then we go out from there all the way up to the Colorado River watershed, which is western wide. But we do a little bit of work abroad as well. So then that's getting beyond, you know, the watershed that we're situated within. But mostly we're looking at work across the border and in Mexico, which we do share some water resources, especially in the border area.
Oh, like the San Pedro River.
Okay. And the Santa Cruz.
So. Oh, that's right. The Santa Cruz does dip into Mexico. What is your educational background? I like to ask guests, especially since we have students listening, so that they can get an idea and a sense of how education shapes how people get into these careers.
Mm-hmm. So I did my undergraduate degree in environmental science and my master's degree here at the University of Arizona in Latin American Studies. And I think sometimes people are a little puzzled about my master's degree, but really I was looking for a program that was interdisciplinary, that I was able to look at environmental issues through a social lens, and was really interested in Latin America and development issues there. And that's why I chose to focus on that. I ended up looking more at border issues in that program and studying the water issues in Ambos Nogales and really getting to know what's happening on the border. But since I was probably 10 years old, I knew I wanted to be working in the environmental field.
And I can see that as a geographer, the Latin American program and the geography program overlapped greatly. Being able to bring in those social components into looking at environmental issues is key.
Absolutely.
Okay, so there's a number of programs going on through Watershed Management Group. One of them is Conserve to Enhance, which ties people's water use directly to the water that's in the environment. And so if you would speak to that.
Conserve to Enhance is a really cool program. It's a nice collaborative partnership with Tucson Water, Water Resources Research Center, the Sonoran Institute, and a number of other organizations. WMG got involved right when it was all starting. And the idea is that people are able to conserve water at their home and save some money. And then what if we collectively were able to say, we want that water savings to go back to enhance the environment, and specifically to enhance our watershed. So that's the basic concept. It's really cool. You can, once you start conserving water, you can track how much water you're saving. And then if you are saving water and you do want to donate those savings back, you can do that through a checkbox on your Tucson water bill, or you can do that through the Conserve to Enhance website. And then all that money is pooled together, and there's an annual grant round where that money is then used to support community projects, often related around restoring some of our urban washes.
Tucson Water has the water audit. Does it start with people getting the water audits and then realizing that they've been wasting water through drippy faucets and stuff like that?
Or? Certainly that's connected. It's not a requirement of the program, but certainly that's a piece of it, is as people are starting to learn about their water use at their home, that they're making the connection to this program as well.
Is it things like rainwater harvesting or gray water? Like, how specifically are people saving water in their homes? Because it's, I mean, other than killing your lawn, it's hard sometimes to know. Water is so cheap that it's hard to sometimes realize how much you're using, and you don't really see that increase until you're using water to fill a pool or water a lawn. And those are where you really see a jump in your water bill. So how does that work?
Really, anything you can do inside or outside of your house is great. Some of the lowest hanging fruit is to do things like having water efficient faucets and low flush toilets. And there are rebates for that through Tucson Water. Watershed Management Group focuses a lot on the outdoor portion because about 40% of the water that we use in Tucson does go to our landscape. And that's a pretty high percent considering that we do have really beautiful native landscape that doesn't need extra irrigation. And so we're really trying to teach people that by the way you shape the earth and the plants you choose, you can actually have a landscape that doesn't require additional irrigation, and you can really cut back that water use and make big savings in that area.
And xeriscape is so beautiful, and we pride ourselves in Tucson on using xeriscaping, and we always go, oh, Phoenix,
yeah,
you know, with their lawns. But I did not realize it was 40%.
Mm-hmm.
And that is not reclaimed water for golf courses or stuff like that. That is 40% of actual potable drinking water.
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
Mm-hmm.
I did not know it was that high. So if people want to get involved, they can go to the Conserve to Enhance website. That's probably the easiest portal.
Yep. conservetoenhance.org. I've been a member for a number of years, and it's a great program. And I really like to see that that money then gets invested back into the community.
Okay, so what are some of the other programs that you have going on?
As I mentioned before, we have the Green Living Co-op, and that is one of our most popular programs. So people can sign up and just attend workshops to come out and learn how to build a rain garden or a gray water system or a cistern. And then we incorporate the native plants and edible gardens into that. And then if you want to turn around and do that at your home, that's part of the process as well. You can turn around and then host a project at your home. So that's a really fun program to get involved in. We also work with schools. So we are able to do some education in the classroom and then help schools build outdoor classrooms and learning laboratories basically outside that incorporate all these same concepts.
Oh, so like school gardens for elementary schools?
Absolutely.
Oh, okay.
Mm-hmm. One of the growing areas of our organization is our river restoration work. And we launched a program 2 years ago. We're calling it our 50-year program. And that is because we have set a vision, a long-term vision of restoring flow to our springs, creeks, and rivers. A lot of the springs, creeks, rivers we see in town that are now dry used to have year-round flow in them. Not that long ago, 1950s. So in the scheme of things, really not that long ago that, you know, people still live here who remember that. So our goal is to really look at what we can do systematically starting now, but with this really long-term picture of how we can reverse that trend. How can we start restoring our groundwater levels? How we can start reducing our water demand to really support our watershed. And one of the areas we're focusing on is what is called shallow groundwater areas. So the Pima Association of Governments has mapped out the remaining shallow groundwater areas in the Tucson Basin. And it's pretty fascinating when I was learning about this several years ago to see that we still have a number of areas where groundwater is 50 feet or less. When you think about the groundwater here, I mean, I just always have heard doom and gloom. It's 200 feet below the surface and oh, this is such a problem that we're never going to be able to fix. And then there actually are areas where it's not that far down, where it's 50 feet or less, and it's still supporting some lush river habitat. So it's areas that we're probably familiar with. Sabino Creek, you know, that's a shallow groundwater area. The Tanque Verde system, Cienega Creek. So there are a number of areas where you're going to know it's a shallow groundwater area by the vegetation you see. There's still that kind of lush habitat.
Cottonwoods,
yeah,
and stuff
absolutely.
Like that.
So that's the good news. It's not all gone. We haven't totally depleted these areas. And so that's the area that we're focusing on first. If we're going to start restoring these areas, let's start in the areas where we can see the biggest gains most quickly. So we have identified Sabino Creek as our first target area. We started work there a year ago. And this year we're adding the Tanque Verde Creek watershed into our restoration program. Pretty comprehensive goal to try to restore year-round or regular flow there. So it's everything from on-the-ground restoration to working with area landowners on conservation techniques to working more at the policy level and some watershed planning. So working with the stakeholders in the area to develop a watershed stewardship plan where we can say, okay, these are our goals for improving this area. This is how we get there. And actually having a plan that we can start to tackle. And I think the energy around this has been amazing. Since we've started this work, so many people have come forward to partner with us. A lot of local landowners are coming to us and saying, we want to be involved in this. What can we do? And so I think it's high time for this program, something that people are really passionate about. And they live in those areas because they love the creeks and they love the wildlife. And these are treasures for us as well. You know, Sabino Creek, it's the most visited natural area in southern Arizona. And who doesn't love to go there in the summer and see the water flowing?
The pools are beautiful, lush pools, and you still see fish. It is one of the most unique places in the Tucson metro region and easily accessible, too.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
I love the fact that the landowners surrounding the creeks are the people that are really engaging. The connection to the land through owning land is kind of another theme that's developed through this series, which I didn't expect. But like Julia Fonseca was talking about ranchers and their connection to the land and teaching them how to grade their land or grade their roads so that they use water or disperse the water across the land more effectively. And there's a lot of support behind it. Louise from Sky Island Alliance, Louise Mistel, she mentioned the connection to the land around springs in Mexico, that these are long-term families that have lived there, and they really care about the mm-hmm. water on the land. Mm-hmm. So that's great to see that here in the Tucson metro region. I wouldn't have expected it, but I like the fact that it's a core piece.
Yeah, absolutely. We were just out along Sabino Creek last weekend working on a property where the families lived there over 40 years, and they are so excited for this program because they have seen the changes in the creek and they really care about it. We were out there doing some basic erosion control, watershed restoration practices, like one rock check dams, and it's basically helping slow the water as it moves across the land so it can infiltrate and support vegetation. It's fascinating because we were walking with this family out along the creek and they were saying how this has really been an incredible year, the amount of flow in Sabino Creek. It has been running nonstop from July through now. There hasn't been any day where the rivers stopped flowing, and they said that hasn't happened in decades. So we're actually in a really exciting time in terms of some real recovery of that groundwater system and starting to see the potential of what it would look like to bring back this creek.
And what do you attribute that to? We did have a little bit wetter year this past year, but yeah. Also restoration work?
I think a lot of it has to do with conservation in the area. There are folks on wells, and then there are Metro Water has wells there as well. And Metro Water has reported that there's been a reduction in water demand from their clients in that area. And that's been happening over the last several years. So that is really helping save water in that area. And then just again, with folks that are on their own private wells, that there's been a reduction in pumping in some of those larger wells as well. That coupled with better rains this monsoon and kind of the early rains this winter has really created a nice flow this year.
I like hearing that. That makes me happy. Okay, so are there other programs that Watershed Management Group is doing right now?
One of the really fun things that people can see and get involved in is our Living Lab and Learning Center. So we inherited a property in 2012 from one of our donors, and we have converted them into office spaces and are in the process of creating this educational center. The really cool thing is that it is a living lab, and so as we're developing it, it's being done through educational trainings and workshops, and members of the community are coming out and helping create this living lab. You can actually come out and maybe be a part with one of the projects, or you can come out and kind of see what's been done and learn from that. We have tours of the living lab second Saturdays of every month. Those are free. And we have a number of classes there as well. We do a rainwater harvesting class that is a qualifier for the Tucson Water Rebate. And we also do a gray water class that's a qualifier for the rebate. It's really an amazing space. One of the exciting things that happened this fall is we converted entirely to rainwater as our water supply. So not just outside, but inside. So we do have a Tucson Water connection, but we haven't used it since October. And the plan is not to ever have to turn it on again. So we are collecting rainwater in tanks, and we have set up the filtration system to be able to drink that rainwater so we can plumb it. It's plumbed inside to our buildings there, and we're able to drink the water, use it in the bathrooms. So that's really exciting to be able to share that and show that with people. With just 3,200 square feet of roof space, we're able to capture all the water we need for our living lab, for offices with 12 staff, and all the many visitors that come to see us.
That's great. And it makes you so much more aware of the water you're using when you know you're using rainwater from a tank. It changed the way that you wash dishes. It changed the way that you would wash your hands or brush your teeth. You know, people say turn off the tap when you brush your teeth. But when you are conscious of using that, it makes such a huge difference in your water use.
Absolutely. Yeah. And it's fun too, because you can step outside and look at the gauge for our tank. It's a 10,000 gallon tank that's underground, and you can see how full it is. So as you're walking around, you know, outside, and you can say, oh, okay, we've got 9,000 gallons left. And now as this winter's progressing now into spring and we haven't gotten a lot of rain, we're starting to see that tank drop. And we've projected that we can make it through the dry period into the monsoon, but we definitely have to be careful how we use our water.
You talk about the demand for water decreasing with the Tucson Metro Water provider, Tucson Water. And one of the conflicts that has come up is that the more that people save water, the less revenue that Tucson Water is able to take in to maintain pipes, to pay staff, etc. Do you have any thoughts about that conflict?
I do. Yeah, I think that needs to be fixed. So our water utility is providing a very important service. And I think that the rates shouldn't be such that if people are conserving this precious resource, that hurts that utility. So the rate system does need to be tweaked so that that's not an issue, because, you know, we do want to conserve that precious resource. And so we need a rate structure system that really supports that, and still at the same time supports our water utility that's providing that resource to us.
Tucson Water's tiered structure of water rate. The more water you use, the more you pay for each additional.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Do you agree with that? Because there's talk of changing that.
Yeah, no, I do. I think that's a really good system. I think, again, there are some tweaks that are needed, but I think we've been heading in the right direction. Everyone uses water, and we don't want to outprice basic water needs for people, right? So basic water needs are actually pretty low. Australia, there's some really interesting studies coming out of how low the water use has gone with all their drought. I think it's something like 35 or 40 gallons per person per day as amount of water that people are using. And I know the actual basic needs that people have is a lot lower than that. We pride ourselves in being around, I think it's 90 gallons per person per day here in Tucson. And that's way better than a lot of cities in the West. But we have a ways to go. We can really look at what are the basic water needs, pricing appropriately for that. But then as people are using these additional amounts of water that they don't necessarily need to be, they're paying the real cost of that.
Yeah.
So, I mean, water in Tucson is very inexpensive compared to a lot of other places. That's definitely true.
Now, in terms of policy, I love to talk about policy with people. What sort of policy work is a watershed management group doing?
One of our earlier policy initiatives was around we call it green streets. So this concept of green infrastructure, which is taking natural systems and adapting them to urban infrastructure. So a great example of that is harvesting stormwater off our streets and to street-side rain gardens that then grow street-side trees. And what you're doing is you're reducing flooding on the streets while growing shade trees for our hot city. And then actually conserving water, because instead of growing landscape with pumped in municipal water, you're able to do it with stormwater. So we've done quite a bit of work around that in Tucson and Phoenix, and actually a number of cities throughout the West. And we wanted to be part a part of making it more of a commonplace practice. So back in 2012, 2013, worked with the mayor's office to develop a Green Streets active practice guidelines. And basically the policy is saying that any new streets or redeveloped streets in Tucson need to be designed to capture stormwater, at least a half inch of rain, and to grow that street-side vegetation. So that was passed by mayor and council back in 2013, and that policy is starting to be implemented in terms of new road development. Like, you'll start to see some of that along the Grant Road redevelopment, that those practices are being incorporated. So that's a great example of some of the policy work we've done.
And do you do policy work at the county or state level?
We haven't done as much. It's been very locally focused, mostly working with the mayor and city council. And we have done a little bit of work in Metro Phoenix and then also in Sierra Vista. But yeah, we haven't been as much focused at the state level, although as we're starting to get into these bigger picture water issues, that's certainly an area we're headed. But really, we focused on what we see as kind of the ground zero for making change and working at the city level for policy.
I like that. Small steps eventually lead to large changes. If you could design the most ideal piece of policy that you could think of, to let your imagination loose in terms of policy, what do you think is one of the most important policy changes we could make as a population?
Oh, wow. Okay, that's a big question. I'm going to keep it to water. So, you know, I think recognizing the intrinsic value of our rivers in terms of the concept, it's referred to as environmental flow. And so there are policies around this, like in Australia, for example, that you can't just allocate all the water in a river to other uses, that there's an intrinsic value and right for water to stay in that river. And I think that's a really critical direction, a really critical policy that needs to be implemented here in the U.S. because what's happened is our rivers, which are really our lifeblood, especially in the West, have been overallocated, have, you know, the groundwater that supports them have been overpumped, and then we lose these essential resources. And so I think it's really important to have at a policy level that there is an intrinsic value and need to have those environmental flows and to keep water in the river.
Now, you're going to be participating in the Water Resources Research Conference coming up March 21st. Mm-hmm. And what are you going to be speaking about there?
So I'm going to be speaking as part of a panel about communications in the digital age. And they were wanting me to speak more about engaging people through social media. And I think it's going to be interesting. You know, I do quite a bit of communications through social media, email, video. We use video a lot to reach a broader audience. But it's interesting because after being asked to speak on that, I also was thinking about how most of that work is really the foundation under it is the personal connection. In fact, all this work that we're doing with digital media, I think really is founded on that in-person connection of working with people through a workshop or seeing them at that mesquite pancake breakfast or teaching at a class. And I think for Watershed Management Group, that's like the fundamental level is that in-person connection. And then those other pieces of communication, the Facebook and email and all that, I think is a support piece to that, to stay in touch and to kind of build upon. So anyways, it's just been kind of interesting for me to reflect back on what role that type of communication has related to our other work.
I think you're keying in on something there because somebody's more likely to share a post of yours, of the Watershed Management Group, if they've had that connection there before.
Absolutely.
But you do a great job. I see Watershed Management Group's social media posts quite frequently.
Oh, so great.
So you're doing something.
It's tough. It's because there's so much media out there. And digital media, I think, has gone honestly overwhelming. There's so much that you have in front of you every day. And so it's, what are you going to pay attention to? And I'm always thinking about that. Why would someone read this post or this email? And again, I think it comes back to that passion and personal connection that they're going to then pay attention to that. And honestly, like, I think print media has a huge role still. A lot of people are moving away from that, but we still do a lot of print. And I think that tangible print media is so much more impactful than reading something online.
I usually ask people why it's important for the general public to know about water. I think it seems like most people who are coming to you as volunteers or people wanting to engage are people who already have that on their radar. And what about the people that are outside of that group where water may not be already on their radar?
Honestly, I don't think it's too hard. I mean, I speak to groups pretty frequently, and it's like you start with how many of you flushed the toilet this morning? How many of you? I mean, we use water in everything we do. I mean, we need it to live. It makes up most of our body. It's just such an essential part of our life that unfortunately we've become a little blind to it because it's become so easy. You turn on the faucet and you have water. But, you know, I think people really connect to water in terms of, especially if it's a hot day, like jumping in a pool or going to the ocean or swimming in a creek. So honestly, I think it's really natural for people to connect to the issue of water. And I don't think it's too hard to get people excited about it.
It's good to hear. Is there anything else you'd want to say?
I'd just like to invite everyone to check out our organization, Watershed Management Group. You can check out our website, but please go beyond the website and check out one of our events or classes. We have so many free opportunities to come out and take a class, to come to a social event. And then if you want to, you can get a lot more involved, come out and actually help build something, get your hands dirty, build a rain garden, take a more in-depth training, and then try something at your home or try something at your parents' home. There's going to be an outlet for you to take what you learn and do something and be part of this bigger movement to really make Tucson a wonderful place to live where we have all the water we need and water abundance. So bringing back those flowing rivers, that is something that is possible that we can all be a part of. And honestly, it's going to take all of us being a part of it for it to happen. So I invite all of you to be a part of it.
Well, that's a great way to end. And thank you so much for coming in, Lisa. I really appreciate it.
Yeah, thank you.
Thank you so much to Lisa Shapek for sharing the work of Watershed Management Group. It was incredible to hear how a diverse team of people is needed when you look at watershed issues and how a service area can be defined by watersheds. There were a few surprises for me, including that 40% of Tucson's water use is still used for outside landscaping, and that basic water use can be as low as 35 or 40 gallons per person per day in Australia, but here in Tucson, we are averaging 90 gallons per day per person, which, while lower than other cities in the West, means we do have a long way to go. It was great to hear of the many programs Watershed Management Group offers, including the Living Lab and Learning Center and Green Living Cooperative Program, where community members can attend workshops on conservation strategies and then host a project at their home. The river restoration work, looking forward to a 50-year program, shows the commitment of Watershed Management Group to a long-term vision of restoring flow. I was delighted to once again see a theme of the connection of landowners to the water in the landscape, a theme I want to explore further as we look at property rights. The Conserve to Enhance program, where money from water savings in your own home gets invested in the environment through grants, was a highlight of this episode. If you would like to learn more about that program, check out conservetoenhance.org. In future episodes, we will be featuring highlights from the University of Arizona's Water Resource Research Center's upcoming conference, including several interviews recorded at the conference. Lisa Shapek will speak on a panel at the Water Resources Research Center conference about communications in the digital age and her insights on the personal connections that ground social media, which were interesting and carried a lot of weight. Plus, we will have more in-depth interviews with water professionals in the future. So keep checking back for new episodes at fathomingwater.com. Fathoming Water is produced in Tucson, Arizona at KXCI Community Radio and engineered at Baby Gas Mask Records. Thank you to the University of Arizona's Water Resource Research Center for their support of Fathoming Water. Thank you to Chris Levesque for our theme music, A Walk in the Wasteland, and thank you for listening. I'm your host, Melissa Mosey.